Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 033.LV1142, certificate number 36161. Alligators in the sewers.
Are you there?
Mikey, where the shell are you? What's happening?
I'm in the 39th Street runoff. It got a little hairy back there with my reptile pal, but I think I lost him.
This has long been basically cryptozoology podcast.
It's becoming increasingly so. Increasingly cryptozoological.
Yeah.
Like as many people do as time goes on.
I when I finally graduated from college, it turned out that I had a minor in Russian lit. And I had not pursued that with any intention at all. It was like, how is it possible?
At the time, they had a lottery, and one student every year was given a minor in Russian lit.
It was like, how did this? And they, you know, the person going over my transcript pointed out that over the course of the 35 years I was pursuing an undergraduate degree, that I had taken enough classes to qualify.
In the spirit of Russian lit, we find a gloomy, bearded man in a dark tavern, and we give him a minor in Russian literature.
There it is. And I feel like cryptozoology is like our unintended minor here.
I was just noticing we still have Mothman here. We have a Mothman bookend right here next to the dictionary.
Yeah, it's part of our menagerie.
Someone sent us this.
Literally a glass menagerie.
I have a child who's very into cryptids and is very angry when I don't understand, like, you know, what the cryptid of Fresno or the cryptid of the low country of South Carolina is.
What is the cryptid of Fresno?
I don't know. But see, this is the problem. Now I have to do this at work also? The cryptid of Fresno is, I don't know.
Go ahead, Google it. We have the internet here.
We have time. We have nothing but time in this format. The Fresno Nightcrawler.
Oh.
That has made two appearances. Wait, come on.
That's not enough.
That's not even a cryptid.
How do you qualify? That's just somebody in a bee costume.
Fresno Nightcrawler. But yeah, so yeah. Cryptozoology is, we did one show about the Sasquatch Prince, right?
Yeah, and we talk about the 14 times every once in a while. Actually, there's nothing cryptozoological about this show.
No, we
talk about people math and airplanes.
People send us Mothman merch, though.
They do.
We're talking about Mothman merch, and insufficiently scientific minds listening are like, you know what those guys want? Mothman action figures.
Well, I think what we're really doing is we're circling around. And we've talked about this too, circling around the Time Life series of 1970s Leonard Nimoy in search of spooky stories.
What if someone were to, without licensing it, do a 1,000-hour adaptation of the Time Life books in conversational podcast form?
Yeah, where 89% of what we talk about has nothing to do with them, but we keep going back to them.
That's part of the gag. It's a conceptual. It's a manuscript found at Zaragoza.
Do you remember the first time you heard about albino alligators in the New York City sewers?
So this is a problem. I think I'm a generation that was either just young enough or just reading nerdy enough stuff that by the time I heard about that stuff, it was as a trope. And someone had to explain to me first what urban legends were and then explain to me the kitten in the microwave, the convertible full of concrete, the alligators in the sewers and so on, because I had never heard of any of these things organically in the wild because I was a four-year-old boy without an office mimeograph machine.
I see.
Like, I didn't have the connections that would have organically told me about these things.
Right, and you were living overseas for your peak alligators in the sewers years.
Yeah, I don't know what the dates are going to turn out to be, but I have a very strong memory of seeing a Games magazine contest in the early 80s where they encouraged people to design a new postage stamp. Maybe it was like the very dawn of the 80s, and this was like, design a postage stamp for the new decade. And so people were producing postage stamps with funny fads on them.
Right. You know, Nagel prints.
Yeah, Nagel prints and generic food. We've done episodes about all of them, I'm sure. And I think the winner submitted a block of stamps that had pictures of different urban legend signifiers.
Oh, good.
And I didn't know what any of these things were. And an adult had to sit me down and explain to me why there would be an alligator in the sewer. So I think my first time hearing about these things was finding out that they did not exist. Which is a terrible, rationalistic, Amazing Randy way to live. What about the magic? What about the cryptids?
Yeah, what a punch in the gut.
You need to learn about these things from... Children need to learn about these things from Leonard Nimoy. He's the only trusted adult that should be telling your kids about the Bermuda Triangle and the Nazca Lines.
I was explaining to my daughter over dinner the other night about how the Batman story was rebooted with The Dark Knight in the 80s, and and she was confused because Batman had always been a scary, dark character to her. I had to explain, no, there were decades there where Batman became increasingly cartoony.
He was camp.
And part of why camp worked was that he was a dark character, and camping him up was hip. But
It explains the movie Zorro the Gay Blade. You take a dark masked Avenger, then you camp it up and hijinks ensue.
But then flipping it around, right, and then making him really dark and edgy again,
exactly,
which sparked the whole Marvel Comics universe in film. And she, not having lived through any of it, was hearing about it all at once. The first time, where it's just like, well, there was the comic book and then the other comic book, and she was just, her head was just spinning.
You're doing an omnibus where it's like, to tell you about this thing, I need to tell you about three earlier things.
I'm afraid so.
But you were doing it solo, so
that's her life, though.
It was probably unlistenable.
she's no stranger to that. But I was, when I was a kid, New York City was in all the newspapers, not like now, because it was bankrupt. It was a failing city.
It was in decline.
Yeah, it was the end of the city in general. When I was in my grade school years, all of the cities had, this was sort of post white flight panic to the suburbs, but the cities hadn't recovered because there didn't appear to be any reason for them anymore.
It was almost bankrupt, right?
Yeah,
Ford to City dropped dead.
Yeah, but it was true of Detroit and Cleveland, and this was Peak Rust Belt, or at least Rust Belt still in the ascendancy, right? It hadn't yet reached the Ronald Reagan years where the pride was back. This was when the pride was entirely gone.
And we should explain to people that we're currently living through an era where much of our society believes that our cities are in this current state, although the happy urbanists living and inhabiting them perhaps disagree. But this was a time when middle America was right and midtown Manhattan was a hellhole, right? Well, like the Port Authority bus terminal was the ninth circle of hell.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
We're going to hear from locals who were like, no, I lived there then and it was
always great.
It was like San Francisco today. It's fine.
The thing is, you know, you could go downtown then and buy a warehouse and, I don't know, you know, chop up drifters and nobody even noticed.
Or become Sonic Youth or Talking Heads. Your warehouse can do either thing.
That's right.
Or both. Thurston Moore was probably chopping up drifters.
At that time, it was, I mean, maybe still. Yeah, except it's in Western Mass now, which is also in decline. But please don't write me about Western Massachusetts.
Ford to Berkshire's drop dead.
You're absolutely right about the urbanists. Everybody's complaining in the newspapers about downtown Seattle, but whenever I go there, somebody rides up on an electric bicycle with, you know, three different little rear view mirrors clipped onto their helmet, and they're like, it's never been a better time.
I walked by a Starbucks that was open at like 10, and I was like, how is any Starbucks open at 10?
Yeah, and there were people in there beatboxing.
It was, I mean, it's in an Amazon building, but the Amazon buildings have no people in them, so I don't understand what's going on.
Who knows what are, talk about cryptozoology, who's living in those Amazon buildings?
And who's going to Starbucks at 9:30? I guess somebody, our friend George told me that they can follow, you know, urbanists can look at cell phone traffic now and see how many people are downtown. And
creepy.
And we're only at like 44% of 2019 downtown traffic. So there is a dystopian quality if you're looking for it.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And I keep saying, because I know some people that have long-term leases for a whole floor in one of those downtown buildings and there's no one around and they're just some, you know, CEO who thought he was going to have 200 employees and now has 10 just roller skating around their empty floor. And I honestly think, like, they can't be like that forever. They're going to have to open them up to urban spelunkers or, you know, like pioneers.
Apparently they can't be apartments because there's not enough windows.
You
can't turn the Bon Marché into a, oh yeah, bathrooms.
In order to plumb them for apartments, you'd have to just slam, you know, 90% more bathrooms into it. Unless you wanted to have a communal floor warehouse kind of thing. When I first moved to Seattle, there were so many of these down in these abandoned warehouses. People slapped up walls out of pallets, and there were 15 different community or 15 different households within the big floor of an unheated warehouse.
Was this like zoned or permitted at
no,
all?
No, okay. I mean, I lived in one, right? Where it was just like the zoning specifically excluded us from doing what we did, but there was no enforcement because there were no people here and they had bigger fish to fry. Well, that's got to be what happens in those high rises. People like, look, I'll rent the whole floor for $900. Let's shake on it. You just never come to that floor. The elevator is just going to open on like a wall of ferns. And then on the other side of that, we're going to do what we want.
Can they all turn into immersive theater experiences?
How many of those are you going to be willing to go to? There's like 80 floors.
We could be the city of thousands of immersive theatrical raves. Experiences.
Just as you look at downtown Seattle, every building, every floor has different like disco lights.
I mean, this is the kind of big idea we're going to need to grapple with.
That's right.
Because no matter how many, did I tell you this? I was having dinner with some guy just inveighing, you know, just railing and shaking his fist about all these lazy programmers working from home and saying they're just as efficient because they can do their job in 2 hours. I was like, wait, isn't that efficient if you can do your job in 2 hours?
Isn't it pretty measurable?
That's incredibly efficient. And after hours of him just kind of grumbling about this, I realized he's like a big Seattle commercial real estate developer.
Were you on an airplane? How are you trapped with a Seattle real estate developer?
Dinner party.
Okay.
The airplanes that follow you home, I guess.
Yeah, I have a regular meeting in one of these buildings that used to just be the hippest place, and now it's almost completely empty. Giant atrium in the middle of the building, like 9-story tall atrium that used to have so many like disruptive meetings happening. People in tight jeans, you know, like really upending the paradigms, and now it's just tumbleweeds. And
think of all the paradigms that are going unupended.
I know, that's right.
All these paradigms are right side up now.
But the building owner wants to do no maintenance now. Yeah. They have zero reason to change anything. And, you know, all the pipes are dripping because these buildings were all made out of a particle board. And I just laugh a hearty laugh and then get on my electric bike and go back out to my forested acre.
And that's what people were doing in New York in 1978.
Wow, you brought it all the way around. No electric bikes at the time, but when I first heard of alligators in the sewers of New York, it seemed completely plausible because New York was being reclaimed by all the crazy, all of our urban fears. The movie Escape from New York.
I was just about to say.
Obviously, like consolidating all those ideas. What would happen?
People thought it was a documentary.
Yeah. What would happen if a city became ungovernable, if it were, and we read about it every day, people like hyperventilating about San Francisco and Chicago, like what's going to happen when the teenage gangs and the homeless take over these cities? And, you know, meanwhile, the guy on the electric bike's like, never been better. Beep, beep. Zing. But we did, especially out here in the hinterlands in the far west, just picture like, well, what isn't possible in New York? And alligators in the sewers, specifically ones that lived there because they'd been flushed down the toilets.
Yeah, they have an origin that can be explained.
Yeah.
So it must be true.
Must be true.
People, as you know, are always buying their kids pet baby alligators. And these are hard to take care of. Is that the origin story?
That's the origin story. And there's a lot of truth to it.
Wait, people are buying their kids pet baby alligators?
So back in the 30s and before, when Florida was first opening up as like, this right. is where everybody wants to go, hackety hack, you know, like
invest.
We're going to go down to Florida.
Buy some acres.
Going down to Florida. Going to make a White Castle slab out of India's sacred cow. And that you could buy a baby alligator in a little terrarium for $1.50. And
like a snow globe, you could shake it up.
Yeah, maybe a little bit bigger than a snow globe.
Come on.
And the little baby alligator, it's like a little Japanese topiary.
Like he'll stay small if you keep him in his terrarium?
Well, you want to believe.
Because a bonsai you can trim. I don't know if you can just keep hacking limbs off an alligator.
I think the idea being like they take a long time to grow. Won't it be fun to have a little alligator? And then of course they don't stop growing. They're not like koi.
Right. They can't sense they're in a square terrarium.
Yeah, they would keep going. And then once they got to be too big to care for in your New York City apartment, your 300 square foot apartment, the idea of the legend was that people would flush them down the toilet. Now, if an alligator is too big to care for,
right,
it's got to be close to too big to flush down a toilet.
Well, what's the pipe diameter of your average American toilet?
Like if
you'd have to get to that alligator very early.
If an alligator was about the size of the normal thing you flush down a toilet,
that's what I'm picturing.
I think you'd be like, yeah, that's I can still keep that around.
Yeah, I've got another few months.
And then as it got bigger, there is a certain, I mean, we look at things all the time and go, is that big enough to flush down the toilet? It's kind of a standard,
This must be you. This might be a you thing.
Anything but the metric system, right? Like, is this burrito too big to go down the toilet? Yeah, in its burrito state.
But if you put it through you, it might not be.
There are a lot of things. If you put it in a blender, maybe you could put it down the toilet.
The thing about the human body is it reduces everything to a certain diameter when it comes out. And you just have to make sure the pipes match the sphincter.
That's right. Your experience may vary.
Right.
Your
sphincter may vary.
So like a lot of urban legends, it did seem like there was a little bit of a disconnect, the flushing down the toilet. But
is this an attested thing that you think of, that people were getting pet alligators and having to – this is not part of the legend. This is a thing that actually – people did. They had to get rid of these souvenir alligators that they unwisely bought.
So in a lot of states in the north, let's just call them the civilized states.
Jeez. Send your letters to.
It's against the law if you live in New York to buy an alligator in Florida and bring it.
Well, nearly every state has these exotic pet laws now.
Yeah, but
you can't have an ocelot here in beautiful Burien.
Well, here in beautiful Burien, I think it would be hard to mail order an ocelot. But
you've got your connections. You've got your cocaine hippo people bringing you the Southern Hemisphere's finest.
Let's see right now. Can I buy a baby alligator?
On what? Where are you? Craigslist?
I don't know. Are you
on the dark web?
I just Googled it. Let's see. You can. Oh,
this is what I'm going to spend my crypto on.
So the first thing that comes up is backwater reptiles, and it says, can you buy an alligator? Here, the first thing is a testimonial. I just want to thank you for my amazing alligator.
That's it.
Your customer service was fantastic, and it's comforting knowing if I ever have a question, y'all always reply.
I'm going to write a children's book called I Just Want to Thank You for My Amazing Alligator.
Here, next quote. Coolest thing I've ever bought online. A fine, healthy specimen with crystal clear eyes and beautiful coloration. I ordered my baby alligator on a Thursday and received it the following day alive and healthy.
Do you have to have Amazon Prime to get a same-day alligator?
Let's see.
It's literally from the Amazon.
It comes via FedEx. Let's see. It's $169 to buy an alligator. That's considerable inflation over the $1.50 it used to be.
Let's do one now. What's a funny address to send an alligator to?
What a way to dock somebody. Don't send them a cheese pizza. Send them an alligator.
Please do not send Omnibus a baby alligator.
You need to order gator food pellets. I only check that
P.O. box like 2 times a month.
1 pound of gator food pellets is $12.99. It's good for several weeks of feeding. So, wait. Okay, so here. We do not ship alligators to...
Oh, list of states?
Alabama. Okay, so there it throws away the whole north versus south thing.
Good.
Arizona, California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Georgia, Hawaii, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Louisiana, Maine, Maryland, Mississippi, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, Vermont, or Virginia.
That was like 34 states.
Without a proper license. You'll notice that Washington is not on that list.
Woo!
So if we wanted to get a baby alligator to go with Esowet, but actually keep it here.
Right. You don't want to put him in Esowet's enclosure.
So you still can buy a baby alligator. And what we don't read here are any of the follow-up comments from people like, 4 years later, this alligator is 5 feet long.
What do they want to do with it? What are they picturing?
I think
Do they have a water feature? Like they want an alligator in their koi pond?
Yeah.
I mean, some of them have little reptile zoos at the side of the highway, right?
Yeah, but I don't think there's enough of those in the world to, like, for instance, Alaska. You're perfectly able to buy one in Alaska. It's going to have to live inside. There's no, the number of days where Alaska is between 70 and 80 degrees in the summer is a measurable number of days.
Alligators like it when water is a liquid. That's important to swimming for them.
Yeah, they need it's a reptile. They need to be able to sun and keep warm. That's part of what we'll see, part of the debunking of the urban legend that you experienced as a child in the 80s.
Was I not supposed to spoil your show by beginning with the debunking?
No. The debunking is a key element.
I think people know.
Everybody, I think, knows that baby alligators in the sewer, or I'm sorry, alligators living in the sewers of New York is an urban myth. But maybe we're here to debunk the debunking.
Or is it?
That's right. The first recorded instance of an alligator in New York was in 1815.
Wow.
A bird hunter in Brooklyn shot a 3-foot-long alligator. We're going to be measuring alligators here in imperial measurements. 3 feet long is 1 meter long.
Imagine a meter long alligator.
A meter long alligator in Brooklyn. This bird hunter was like, whoa.
Hipster alligator.
This was before they were selling baby alligators for $1.50 in Florida. How did this alligator get there?
That was my question.
Did it ride in the mouth of a pelican? Probably not.
Who can say?
Did it...
Was it brought by human hands?
Did it hitch a ride on the back of a blue whale?
I mean, somebody must have brought it, right? Somebody coming up from the bayou.
Yes, but imagine the difficulty in bringing an alligator from the bayou or Brooklyn, or I'm sorry, or Florida to Brooklyn in 1815.
Especially if it's a meter long.
There were...
The Lincoln Tunnel's not open yet?
No, there weren't even Calistoga wagons yet. That would have been quite a journey. And quite a journey to get an alligator that far and then be like, this alligator's too big, and like just dump it in the Gowanus.
People are going to get mad because I said Lincoln Tunnel. Whatever, the other one.
What's wrong with Lincoln Tunnel?
Because it goes to Jersey, not Brooklyn.
Oh, I see. You're talking about the
George Washington Tunnel. Is that what that's called?
The which one? The one that goes down from the Battery underneath to the FDR? No, not the FDR, to the
Holland Tunnel, right?
Holland. No, that goes across the East River. The third tunnel. It's the one that flooded during the big hurricane. It goes from Red Hook to over across that island, Roosevelt Island. No, not Roosevelt Island, the other island.
Is it just called the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel?
Governor's Island. It is. Brooklyn Battery Tunnel.
I could never have told you that.
It goes under Governor's Island.
I apologize for disrupting this.
I mean, this whole... I'm embarrassed at how hard that was for us to get those words out. At the time, there was a museum in, down in lower Manhattan, which was really the only thing that wasn't farmed. The
inhabited part of Manhattan.
A museum called it was basically the American Museum, and it was just a P.T. Barnum style, like, here's a two-headed pig in a jar, in a pickling jar, and here's the first American flag, that kind of thing.
That seems pretty good.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
That's a good museum.
In 1815, what do you expect?
Today, museums are like, take your Instagram picture in front of this wall of purple stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So better.
Yeah, it's better. It's got a two-headed pig.
This museum was called Scudder's American Museum. It was run by a man named Scudder.
Ah.
It eventually was sold to P.T. Barnum. But from 1810 to 1841, it had some, you know, it kind of moved around the city, but it had four stories of crazy stuff, including a 10-foot-long female alligator and 11 baby alligators, also found in Brooklyn. Now, in the 1830s...
So the museum's not the source of these. The museum is their new home.
Well, I mean, and they're dead. They're taxidermied.
Right.
But picture the circumstances of an alligator not just arriving in Brooklyn in the 1830s, but getting to 10 feet long. That's not a thing you can do over the course of a summer, right?
For years, it's wandering Brooklyn, probably speaking Dutch.
Except that it gets snowy and cold and would have done even more so.
Can they hibernate?
Well, they do in winter slow down and you know, their metabolism slows down like reptiles do, and they can survive a winter. They can't survive a winter where the temperature goes, below zero.
Yeah.
And so no, they can't really survive like out in the swamps.
So they were somebody's pet or they found shelter.
10 feet long. Picture a 10-foot long alligator, even in Florida in 1815.
It would certainly raise suspicions with the neighbors.
I think in Florida it wouldn't. But in
Florida you get issued one.
In Brooklyn, how in the heck does it get there? So first earliest sightings of these gators dispels to some degree the myth that the debunking of the myth, but also the myth that alligators are a result entirely of this illicit 20th century carnivalesque Florida trade in baby alligators.
Because there was a wild alligator somehow surviving somewhere, possibly a Piper culvert.
More than one.
Multiples.
But the contemporary, or I'm sorry, the 20th century story of alligators in the sewers, a lot of the debunking articles that came out when you were a kid focused on the idea that the first alligator sighting, proper alligator sighting in New York, happened in the 1930s. And this would have been a time when alligators were available by mail, you know, in the back of a magazine, a little ad like buy a baby alligator, but also a lot of people going to Florida and bringing back these tourists, you know, what? Souvenirs.
Tchotchkes.
But in fact, the first modern sighting of an alligator happened in 1907. A sewer worker, and we're going to encounter a few sewer workers here.
Good. It's about time they get their place in the sun, as it were.
Yeah, the sewer workers that we hear about tend to be high-ranking sewer workers, management.
Is that true? You hear about a lot of elite sewer workers in your day-to-day?
Yeah. So what we don't know is the unnamed working man sewer workers who probably actually encountered these gators. Their names are lost to history.
I think they're all named like Norton from Honeymooners.
Norton from Honeymooners. Norton from Honeymooners. That's right.
That's what
Norton
said
from Honeymooners III.
That's what it said on his coveralls.
But a man named Charles Gids found an 18-inch long, or let's say half a meter long, alligator in the sewers of Kearney, New Jersey.
Where's Kearney?
It's across the river. It's in New Jersey.
You take the Holland Tunnel.
Yeah, you take the A train, and then you take the Holland Tunnel. And he actually, he was cleaning out. He's management, but he was in there. There was a sewer clog. He reached in to unclog a certain part of the sewer, and he was bitten in the hand by this foot and a half long alligator.
Yeesh.
And, where did this alligator come from? Well, it turned out it was discovered to be an escaped pet and they returned the alligator to its grateful owner.
Oh, the owner had not flushed it. The owner was frantically putting up lost gator signs on telephone poles around Kearney.
As far as we know. Now, this is all based on newspaper reports at the time. I'm speculating that if your alligator gets out into the sewers, what did it do? Get through the fence? Did it climb out a window? Like an alligator, yes, can escape if there's a hole in the wall at the floor level, big enough for an alligator.
If you put in a pet door.
Right. An alligator can't like climb a pole. So I'm betting when they asked around, anybody know anybody that had an alligator? Oh yeah. You know, Vincenzo had an alligator and they went,
it's a little racist,
knocked on the okay. door. Did you have an alligator? Oh, my alligator.
You found my alligator.
And so, yeah, he's like, oh, I've been looking all over.
Thank goodness.
But I bet you it went right back in the sewer.
I don't know. Like, do you think, an alligator is trying to get away from the elements. Mm. It wants to get to low, warmer water. Mm-hmm. Maybe it naturally finds its way into some kind of manhole, culvert, sewer drain. And an escaped alligator maybe does find its way naturally to the sewers just through alligator instinct.
Alligator instinct is...
I have an instinct that keeps me away from the sewers. That's a mammalian instinct.
There you go. Stay away from the sewers. Although the rats love the sewers and they're mammals,
that's
as we
true.
Know.
I'm a higher mammal.
Higher mammals. You're a tree climbing mammal.
I'm never... Exactly. Yeah. That's my ancestors were all tree climbers. That's mm-hmm. why we survived. Mm-hmm. I'm never going to become a toxic Avenger or a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle because I have a strong... Stay out of the sewers instinct.
Although maybe it's time for a rewatch of Escape from New York because you can become a toxic Avenger and live in skyscrapers, apparently.
Oh, that's fantastic. See, that would be my dream.
Also, when was the last time you watched the movie Heavy Metal?
The cartoon?
Yeah.
I feel like I just watched the first half hour of it on streaming not that long ago.
Yeah, there's a whole segment of sort of a post-apocalyptic New York, the taxi driver... sequence. Some of our listeners are nodding in recognition.
Well, this is what we can do with our empty department stores and office buildings. Turn the Bon Marché into a toxic Avenger. I don't know. Is it a tourist attraction?
I bet you there are cyberpunk communities that already have this deeply in mind, and they want to build walls out of old TVs and flickering computer monitors that are showing like. Crazy car crash videos and they're all dressed like Wendy O. Williams. It's going to be like a hot scene, but I'm going to be too old to enjoy it. By the time it really flourishes, they'll be like, "What's up, old man? How'd you get in here?"
You'll be dressed like Grace Jones.
Like, do you know who I am? I invented this thing. Ken, you know, I have a tendency to think that people younger than us who grew up with the internet just instinctively know how to do all kinds of internet things, like put their font into italics, or
is that an internet thing?
Send an email, online,
fix their printer driver.
But in fact, I think even Gen Z and millennial peoples don't always know how to create a beautiful website.
I used to work in web programming and web design, and that's because it is a difficult and complicated skill, and the web is more difficult and complicated every day. Mm-hmm. But with that complication has come a market opportunity, which is what if you could just help people easily build cool, amazing-looking websites that do everything they need?
That's the thing. This is a thing that crosses all generations. Lots of people... of all different ages, have cool ideas. And if you have a cool idea and want to turn it into something that's online, and why wouldn't you? If you want to do more than just post pictures of yourself standing next to it on Instagram, you want to actually make a website for it.
If you have a cool idea and it's offline only, does it even exist?
That's the thing. No, it doesn't.
What are you doing? Are you placing a classified ad?
Unless you're selling pots at a fair. But even then, you're going to want to put them online because people are going to go, can I get these on the internet? I'd rather not carry it home.
If you're selling turnips at a farmer's market, maybe you don't need Squarespace. But everyone else listening.
Because here's what you want to do. You want to showcase your work.
Yep.
You want to maybe blog about your experience, both coming up with your cool ideas and and putting the rubber to the road?
Yeah, built-in blogging and commenting features.
You want to sell stuff? You want to sell not just products, but services?
Built-in shopping carts and scheduling tools?
Also, of course, one of the hardest things, promotion, which is also like a massive challenge.
Not with Squarespace, it's not, John.
What? Squarespace? What? No one expects the Squarespace revolution.
Oh, did we not name the sponsor yet?
Not yet, no.
Here's what unifies all the generations.
Yes.
A love for the amazing websites that can be generated with Squarespace.
Here's what Squarespace does for you. Squarespace gives you beautiful templates created by world-class designers, and I can confirm that. The templates themselves, beautiful right out of the box, before you even fill them with your own content.
They should be in a museum, each template.
They have powerful e-commerce functionality that lets you sell anything online. Now, our younger listeners are going to know what e-commerce means, but like our boomer listeners are going to have to do the math on that.
It's
e-commerce.
It's like commerce.
E-commerce.
But you've taken E beforehand?
It's a lowercase e and then an uppercase C too. E-commerce. Squarespace also gives you the ability to customize the look, feel, settings, products, and more of your new website with just a few clicks.
Let's tell our listeners how to take advantage. If you need a website for any reason, you're selling something, you're making something, you're doing something, you want to be out there, go to squarespace.com/omnibus to start your free trial. Then when you're ready to launch, use offer code OMNIBUS again. It's the magic word. And you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
That's squarespace.com/omnibus for a free trial. So go on, test it out, build it out, see how you like it.
See what you think. Tell us what you think.
And then when you're ready to launch, use the offer code OMNIBUS and save 10% off your first purchase.
Again, everyone but turnip farmers. Please, no turnip farmers apply.
By the time the 30s arrived, now we're in my father's lifetime, the number of alligators in the sewers really exploded. It was a big alligator in the sewers time.
From one? No, what are we at? Two?
So we found there have been a few, but in 1932, two boys caught a 3-foot-long alligator, again, back to a 1-meter-long alligator, in the Bronx River.
Huh.
They lassoed it, and it turned out—
Kids were tougher back then,
they were,
right?
They were.
Imagine these Zoomer snowflakes.
Yeah. These kids hadn't been home in a week.
These kids today wouldn't be lassoing alligators. Well,
they're not even going to the Bronx River. What was the last kid you ever heard of down on the banks of the Bronx River? I mean, I guess we're not reading the Bronx newspapers, but—
Those kids would be too triggered to lasso an alligator in the Bronx River.
Apparently, this alligator also— escaped pet, in quotes. Those are my quotes.
You're doing air quotes.
Big air quotes.
That's the
big
record show.
Starting to become increasingly dubious.
We need a sound effect because people can't tell when you're...
and then I think one of the most famous alligator sightings in 1935, in February of 1935. So not
cold.
Not a warm time in New York. Two teenagers were out shoveling snow in East Harlem, an area that we now call Spanish Harlem, or maybe they don't even call it Spanish Harlem.
Yeah, I kind of wonder.
When I lived there, they called it Spanish Harlem, and it truly was, well, there were no Spanish people there, but it was
Puerto Rican neighborhood.
Puerto Rican Harlem. But in East Harlem, two teenagers shoveling snow looked down into a sewer grate, like a stormwater grate. And with a clothesline, they, again, lassoed.
A lot of lassoing Bowery boys back then.
Lassoed an 8-foot-long alligator living in, they pulled him up out of ice water. And when the alligator, now I'm talking 8 feet long, so what is that? That's almost 3 meters long. When the alligator started to, even in his semi-frozen state, started to thrash around and threaten them and want to kill him.
I would not lasso anything that big.
They beat it to death with their snow shovels.
It was a similar time.
It was. And this was a time when those kids were on the front page of the paper, heralded as having...
Probably holding it up.
Holding it up with their clothesline lasso.
That was the thing about the mid-30s. No problem, too big. You couldn't just batter it to death with a snow shovel. That's what FDR would say.
I mean,
will batter this depression with a snow shovel.
Think about what happened to our famous red camel of the desert. It was also just like, look at that.
Yeah, let's shoot at it.
The American way until very, very recently.
Well,
in fact, in recent news, seems like it's still the American way in some places.
Yeah, it's coming back, yeah. I think. So, let's see.
Go ahead.
February 1935.
Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going with this.
Well,
it's very
big. About it. Yeah, it's a large alligator. The suspicion was... I'm going to make some winky air quotes again, that this one had escaped from a passing steamer.
Like a boat?
Yeah. Well, in February, in the East River.
It just opened the porthole of its cabin and, I mean, it's got to be freight if it's on a steamer.
Well, you would think.
It got out of its crate?
That had it escaped from a passing steamer, there would have been a bill of lading that somebody on the dock would have said, where's my 8-foot alligator? And they would have had to account for it. It got out and was beaten to death by some teens.
Luckily, it was insured.
In the Bronx. So because the newspaper article did not, it sort of said, scare quotes, escaped from a passing steamer, but no follow-up on like, and it was, and it belonged to, you know, Mrs. Vanderbilt. And it was, you know, it was destined for her indoor swimming pool.
I think a lot of old-timey journalism stuff was just made up.
Okay, or...
These guys had a deadline and a lot of drinking to do, and they got one quote. It was on a steamer.
There's always... That's true. They may have all been very drunk. And in fact, drunkenness does play into this story in a minute. There always seems to be a convenient explanation for why these alligators are not actually living in the sewers. They always seem to have recently fallen off a boat or come in an envelope or been flushed down a toilet.
Do you think this is propaganda? It's a kind of a blame the immigrant... alligator kind of a thing. Like there's no homegrown problem, nothing to see here. The mayor of New York is terrified that people will.
I'm just teaching the controversy here.
I remembered what I was going to say earlier when I was really thrashing around.
Okay.
Is there's subway platforms by this time.
Yes.
Are people like, so a huge crowd of New Yorkers is spending a big part of the day underground.
Right.
No, you can't go to a subway platform in New York without seeing a rat or two.
Or an alligator.
But that's what I'm wondering. Are people seeing alligators in the subways?
Not yet.
Oh.
So in New York, there's, you know, the underground of New York is crazy. If you can see if you see a map, just the vertical orientation of all the tunnels and all the crazy stuff under the city of New York, it's absolutely bonkers.
We have an entry about this, right?
Yeah, that's
FDR
right.
Secret railway tunnel or whatever it was.
Like the fresh water that comes into New York from the Catskills in the giant, you know, and we've done an episode about that too, the crazy New York water system. Like some of those fresh water tunnels are 500 feet underground because they had to go that far down just to get out of the way.
That's the first place where there's no other tunnels.
Yeah, there's tunnels going every which way. But New York has now a kind of bicameral wastewater system. 60% of the wastewater now in New York is mixed, meaning all of the stuff that comes from the potty.
Gray water? Or is that
that's black water. And the gray water that comes from your sink and shower, uh-huh. And the storm water that runs off the streets.
What color is that?
That is
brown,
oil colored.
Yeah, shiny,
oil colored, and full of like tinfoil and baby alligators. That all just mixes in these giant sort of mixed pipes, which is a bad way of doing it.
Yeah, you don't want to send, because you'd have to sewer process everything, sewer treat everything.
That's right. And what happens is when there's a big storm. Or say, for instance, a tidal surge, all that stuff from the potty and stuff from the street all mixes together and it has to go somewhere. The sewage treatment plant can't handle it, so it just goes into the rivers. Now, 40% of New York wastewater now is the Blackwater is separated and in its own system.
This is like newer tech, right? Yeah,
and this is where you want to head. So the stormwater comes into the drains, flows through its own sort of clean-ish system, and it can go out into the rivers without having picked up a lot of wet wipes along the way. Gum wrappers probably, but not, you know, not the worst stuff, not the bacteria-laden stuff. And then the other stuff is created and goes into its into a treatment project. But back in the 30s, it was real, you know, two pistols in the air, kind of, let's just deal with this as it comes. So there was a lot of, I would say, probably most, the stuff in the sewers was a kind of mixture of
You didn't know what everything. You were going to get.
That's right. You didn't know what you were going to get. In 1937, this is only 2 years after the giant 8-foot-long gator killed with the snow shovels. In 1937, a barge captain in the East River lassoed.
Man, people just keep lassoing stuff.
A 5-foot-long gator.
Do you think everybody just knew how to lasso? Like, if you asked me to do Will Rogers type rope tricks today, I would be terrible at it. But it seems like in the 30s, every little kid with a newsboy cap or one of those crown hats could do it.
Well, you know, Tom Mix movies probably really big.
That's true. There's probably more practicing going on.
Yeah, there was a lot
in vacant lots.
A lot of romanticizing of the recently
of the lasso.
Tamed West.
Romanticizing of the lasso.
And so everybody, I guess, could lasso. I think you're right. If I were on a boat in the East River and saw a 5-foot-long alligator, would I immediately make a lasso out of available
plus there has to be material around
and set about to capture it.
I'm picturing a lot of grumpy old men in the 60s just grumbling and maybe writing letters to the editor about how the kids today don't know how to lasso anything.
They've never even lassoed
in my day.
What I want to know is these are just the gators that have been lassoed,
right? For every one lassoed gator, are there 10 unlassoed? 100?
How many people are in the East River? They see a 5-foot-long gator and they go, meh.
How many people went to Valentino movies instead of Tom Mix and are like, I'm going to kiss that gator.
And I'm going to dance with that gator.
I'm not going to lasso it.
And then 1 week after the 5-foot-long gator lassoed by the barge captain, the first Brooklyn subway gator appears, a 2-foot-long gator just moseying along a subway platform.
There was no third rail then, so.
Hitler's already in power at this point, and their gator, the first
gators
gator
are arrived. In the subways.
This gator... The gator in the subway.
Are you saying there's a connection, by the way, between the rise of National Socialism and the rise of the gators?
I'm just teaching the controversy. Okay. You come to your own conclusions. This gator reputedly was winky dumped in a trash can. Now, who knows that?
Yeah, how would you know?
By the
time you saw it, it was well out of the trash can.
That's right. You looked around the subway platform. Where could it have come from?
You can't ask the gator.
Probably that trash can. Now, how do you get a 2-foot-long alligator into the subway and into a trash can? Like, how was it in? Was it in your purse?
I have a question. Did they have those swinging top trash cans at that point, or
no,
is this just an open cylinder?
I bet it was an Oscar the Grouch style trash can. And then
gator's going to crawl out of that.
If a gator gets in there and crawls out of it, it wouldn't be speculative. Like, where did this come from?
Right,
people would go like,
there's a trail of trash leading back to that tipped over trash can.
So at this point, it's pretty well established that there are alligators in the sewers of New York. And yet every story, even then, there's sensationalist journalism about it. Alligators in the sewers! But there's always somebody standing there going, that one fell off a boat, and this one came from a kid's bedroom, and that one was in a trash can.
It doesn't seem like that kind of person usually stands up against the tide of sensationalist headlines.
No, it's true.
So there's clearly a conspiracy keeping our alligator cryptid knowledge from avalanching out of control.
Well, again, I'm not somebody that's sitting here, ready to take a side on whether or not the Earth is flat, whether or not there are UFOs living under the North Pole. I tend to be fairly agnostic about this stuff. I'm just saying. Am I right? I'm just saying.
Who who benefits?
Who benefits from this?
From,
that's right.
From alligator suppression.
So during this period, the mid-century period, there is a pretty famous sewer official by the name of Teddy May. Teddy May is a kind of legendary New York City sewer commissioner. Colorful, speaks with a real downtown brogue, says use.
Bugs Bunny accent.
Yeah. And he, doubting that there are alligators in the sewers, feels like maybe the sewer workers under his charge are getting drunk during the day, and he goes down into the sewers convinced that there are not alligators in what he describes as his sewers. But he goes down into the sewers searching for alligators and in fact finds what he describes as a community of small-ish 3-foot-long alligators.
At least he's honest. He's not covering it up.
He then sets about to eliminate the alligators.
With a lasso. He sets about to make a lasso from nearby materials.
He sends, he tries to poison the alligators. He sends some hunters down with 22s to dispatch the alligators. And by...
Are there a lot of sewers you can walk in?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
In movies, you've always got the, you know, the side, little sidewalks on the side and the trench in the middle.
Hmm. Yeah, that's right. I mean, the storm drains, you know, connect to big central sewers. And I think this, even the storm drains, you can climb down in. I mean, maybe you wouldn't want to, but, well, in particular if they're full of alligators.
If I'm Jean Valjean fleeing a barricade, I'm going to take my chances with alligators.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, when the heavy rains come, those things have to be pretty big to account for all that water.
That's why they're big, because you'll be underwater if you're Teddy May walking around in them.
Yeah, and a lot of, you know, the maintenance guys have to get down there, and this was before you could send a robot dog. So he declares the sewers are free of alligators. This all comes out in a short chapter in a book called The World Beneath the City, which was published in 1959, and it's kind of the first sweeping description and account of all of the different tunnels and it's, you know, it's a kind of a seminal book about how New York is built. And there's a short chapter about alligators in the sewers, even then kind of trying to get to the bottom of it. Teddy May is quoted extensively in that chapter, claims to have eliminated all the alligators in the sewers.
I don't see how he did. He found a few and got rid of them.
Now, this is where the new color on it, which is to say a lack of color, the idea that the alligators in the sewers are albino and blind.
Yeah, I don't know if that doesn't seem big part of the myth in my mind.
That they're albino?
I guess there is a movie called Albino Alligator.
Hmm. All right. Go on.
I don't know. I think that's Kevin Spacey, so we don't talk about it anymore.
Albino Alligator.
That's directed by Kevin Spacey, even worse.
Oh, wow. Crazy.
So this is part of the thing, that the alligators down there are like cavefish? They've evolved away from the need to see things?
Yeah, the problem is that albinism is not a thing that you get from being
from
in the
being
dark.
Indoors? Or I would be even lighter than I am.
Yeah, it's not a trait that you get zapped with.
And presumably it would take hundreds or thousands of years of evolution for cavefish to lose their sight or pigment.
That's right.
So, and there just haven't been New York sewers long enough for that kind of evolution to happen.
But this albino alligator thing happens at a time when I guess your average man on the street does not understand albinism or that it's a genetic thing and not an acquired trait.
I bet you'd have to go through 50 things they don't understand to even get to
That's right.
the thing about understanding albino genetics.
But when I first heard the story, I was told that they were all white alligators, either blind or with pink eyes, you know, living underground. Now, you and I have actually seen an albino alligator.
We have?
Yes, because we did a live omnibus recording at the California Academy of Sciences, and they have a very large albino alligator living in a huge kind of tank environment.
My kids got boa constrictors lowered onto them at that museum.
My daughter still remembers going to the earthquake simulator which is just you walk into a house and then they shake it with
it's a bunch of teenagers.
Yeah, and she was very impressed by the experience.
I remember their big rainforest thing. It's kind of you're in a big globe or something, and they have an albino alligator, huh?
Yeah, it's sort of like the Amazon spheres,
right,
except with an albino alligator.
Jeff Bezos can't afford an albino alligator.
I bet he can. I bet he has one, but he just doesn't
keep it off display.
Yeah, he doesn't show it off.
He sicks it on burglars.
Now, there is a version of this story that all of this stuff is there. The compatible with Marxism version of this story is that a lot of these alligators are part of a rich person's menagerie of creatures, that someone like Jeff Bezos is out capturing gibbons and Komodo dragons.
And there's Park Avenue penthouses full of jaguars.
Full of these things. And, you know, there's some truth to that legend. The whole idea of a Central Park Zoo came as a result of the Vanderbilts and the J.P. Morgans saying, like, I brought this lion back from Africa, but now it's too big.
I tire of my lion.
And so they all ended up in Central Park because at the time, hey, I got all the birds of Shakespeare's plays. Where should I put them? Central Park. And then quickly it became a zoo. And did you hear about the owl that just escaped, the European?
Everyone loves that owl,
that's
right?
Such a wonderful owl.
It's got so many people following it around that they're disrupting its day and it can't feed. So they're asking people to stay a few trees away.
Yeah, they were reporting on the location of the owl, and then it became they were menacing the owl. So now they're not. But the owl seems to be doing fine. They were worried it didn't even know how to fly. It had been in captivity its whole life. And at first it was like, wah, couldn't fly. It was like the greatest American hero. And then it figured it out, and now it's out killing rats. And
believe it or not, it's walking on air.
It is.
That's crazy.
Of course, it's going to eat a rat that died from poison, and that's going to be the end of that story. But
was it going to displace a bunch of native species? We're very anti-invasive species on Omnibus. Why are we giving this owl a pass?
Well, I guess two reasons. It's not, this owl does not constitute a breeding population, given that it is one owl. And also,
owls can't do parthenogenesis or something. They can't sprout.
So
can't sprout owlets out of its talons.
And I think the whole invasive species in New York thing, if you're talking about Norway rats, you shouldn't set them loose. If you're talking about
albino alligators,
swallows or albino alligators, no. But one escaped owl, I think, bring it.
All it's going to take is one more escaped European owl.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. And I think there are people buying them for $1.50 and having them shipped.
Because that owl looks lonely, maybe.
So alligator in the sewers becomes kind of a literary trope. It ends up in an episode of Leave It to Beaver. Thomas Pynchon writes about alligators in the sewers is one of the conceits of his novel V.
Mm. And this all predates actual academic work being done by folklorists on these American legends, right? That's Jan Harald Brundtland in the 70s, maybe?
Yeah, also, why would you debunk such a wonderful idea, alligators in the sewers?
Also, there's abundant newspaper clippings to undebunk your debunking.
It seems to me that there's a lot more work going into saying there aren't alligators living in the sewers than the actual...
Follow the money.
That's right.
Who is paying off folklore professor Jan Harald Brundtland to convince kids like me that there's no alligators in the sewers when there's clearly hundreds?
In 1982, no less a writer than Anna Quindlen of the New York Times writes a long article where she quotes John Flaherty, who was the sewer chief of the time. All these sewer chiefs,
the Teddy May of his day.
Cheeves. And he debunks the idea that there are alligators in the sewers. But then, in the same year, a 2-foot alligator is found in the Westchester County Reservoir.
Who am I going to believe? The
sewer chief?
John Flaherty or my own eyes?
My own eyes. That alligator, even in the 80s, also lassoed and taken, in that case, to the Bronx Zoo.
Maybe they're using one of those loops, those rubber loops that you can tighten on the stick.
By that time, I mean, that's what they use down in the South, but why would they? I guess you'd have one in New York because you never know what you're going to find.
That doesn't count as a lasso. Do they call those an Alabama lasso?
I want to think that all of these sewer guys are also
lasso.
Also practicing Wee-haw! Lassoing traffic cones.
Hand me my swamp lasso.
If you recall, the whole premise of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles is that these are mutant ninja turtles.
And they're exotic pets, right? Somebody tossed out baby turtles?
And their bad guy
is
an alligator, or one of their bad guys.
Is that right?
Is a mutant sewer alligator. Now, the thing about the New York City sewers is that they are, admittedly, all the sewer chiefs admit, full of snapping turtles that do live in the sewers. They are reptiles. Snapping turtles, of course, are native to New York. And so the giant snapping turtles, they're not only native to New York, they are the New York state animal.
Hey, forget about
it. Hey,
I'm swimming here.
So there are, the New York sewers are capable of supporting a flourishing population of snapping turtles.
Large reptiles.
So
If they're confessing to that, maybe alligators are just, maybe it is an occasional interloper.
Yeah, nobody wants to talk about.
There's no endemic population.
Because they're like, the turtles, you know. Yeah.
I mean, I would be just as horrified to find a large turtle trying to bite me in a sewer.
Yeah. Well, a snapping turtle's a gnarly, gnarly thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
And they like pizza and use nunchucks when exposed to toxic waste.
I'm not familiar with the mutant turtles story as much as maybe I should be, because it's a late 80s thing, and by then I was already into drugs.
I'm a little vague on it too, but they do have nunchucks and pizza.
Yeah, I know. I knew that part.
And they're all maybe attracted to the same lady journalist?
I feel like when I was at Comic-Con, there were some sexy mutant turtles that I wasn't sure what they were cosplaying exactly.
Where would you put the word sexy in the name? There's at least, let's see, there's five options.
Sexy Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, Teenage Sexy Mutant Ninja Turtle, Teenage Mutant Sexy Ninja Turtle.
Mm-hmm. Teenage Mutant Ninja Sexy Turtle. You can't put it after Turtle. I'm going to go back and say there's
ninja,
four.
Ninja Sexy, no, Turtle Sexy.
There's four options.
I don't think that you can say that they're sexy teenagers.
Sounds like a Halloween costume.
Can say that they're sexy. I guess they could be sexy mutants.
I think you should put
sexy
an order of
turtles.
It's funny that they're teenage. Like, that's a big part of, I mean, they're mutants and they're ninjas and they're turtles. That's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Does it matter that they're teenagers?
Are they still?
I mean, yeah. Are they even coded that teenage-y?
They were teenage for 8 years.
They like pizza.
Yeah. Okay. Like, that's why.
Because teenagers, boy. Love pizza.
I think that even now you could read the Extreme Teen Bible and get a lot out of it. So teenage maybe is a state of mind. Actually, these days.
I know.
I identify as a teenager.
These are failure to launch Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They're still living at home.
In 1997, a 4-foot gator was found in Queens. In 2001, a 2-foot caiman. Now we're introducing other species of
Cayman's not an alligator, right? It's a similar crocodile-like thing.
It's one of those. It's one of those. It's a reptile that eats things that has a tail and lives in a swamp. In 2003, another 3-foot-long gator found in Queens. In 2010, a crocodile discovered in Astoria, living under a car. I don't know how much it was living there. All of these have some story about, that must have been a pet. That was found in a garbage can. That must have fallen off of a cruise ship. No one can confirm or deny. None of these.
Somebody knows. Somebody's like, somebody's reading the New York Post and they're like, that's got to be Randy.
Right. But I'm not going to say anything.
I'm not
going
to say anything.
I'm not going to admit to that.
What is the fine? I don't even know.
Between 2015 and 2020, 5 different alligators were found in the sewers. Now, this is not the only alligators that are found in New York. In fact, the New York animal control gets called all the time to take alligators out of people's homes. Alligators that are identified as, I brought this alligator back and now it's too big.
I regret my exotic pet. Yeah. Is there like an amnesty, or do they come in and they say, well, I'm going to have to write you up?
I'm sure there's some kind of like, we're not just going to take care of your alligator.
Yeah, you don't want to coddle crime.
Yeah. There's a $500 fine. I don't know. That's a good question.
You're just encouraging more crocodile importation.
By some reports, New York City rescues 100 alligators a year from various straits. Now,
do they put them down? Can you adopt a rescue gator?
I mean, are alligators endangered? They're certainly endangered in New York.
Yeah, if they're getting 100 a year.
Do they repatriate them? That seems like a lot of work. I'm not sure. All the zoos in New York State can't accommodate 100 alligators a year.
No, but you could probably send them to preserves.
Now, the fact that people in New York are continuing to, I doubt that 100 gator a year figure, by the way, that does seem to support the idea that there are gators, that could be a source of alligators in the sewers. What's interesting to me is you never hear the story. Everybody wants to tell you about how they can't live in the sewers. It's too cold. The sewers are full of E. coli and gross.
Is that right? They suggest reasons why it's not likely.
It could never happen. Although, you know, there's over 100 miles of steam tunnels in New York, pumping hot steam all around, and I bet it's there.
Alligators having a schvitz?
Maybe they're not living in the steam tunnels, but the steam tunnels are adjacent to other underground places where alligators could be basking throughout the year.
Plus, even in cold weather, like, you don't have to go down too deep, and it's not that cold, right?
But what you would think is if alligators were in the sewers and dying every year, that we would be discovering dead alligators.
That's true.
There's something over there. What is it? It's a dead alligator.
No, there's something even bigger down there eating the dead alligators or eating the alligators before they get to old age.
Like all these lassoers, it's much easier to lasso a dead alligator. And yet there's never newspaper stories about finding alligator corpses, all these 3-foot alligators that were living in the sewers. And now, and can't survive the winter.
It's easy to lasso a dead alligator is a really good kind of folksy aphorism you're trying out there.
Yeah, lasso a dead alligator.
As my pappy used to say, it's easy to lasso a dead alligator.
Yeah, it sounds like a Dan Ratherism.
That's right. He used to end every newscast by saying, it's easy to lasso a dead alligator. Good night.
The Manhattan Borough historian, a man by the name of Michael Missioni, he has declared February 9th, Alligators in the Sewer Day in New York City.
Is this kind of a winky-winky way to keep it seem like it doesn't exist, or are they now embracing the branding?
Well, which is it? Which is it? Does it exist? Does it not exist and it's funny? Or does it really exist and we're trying to make a mockery of it to conceal that it doesn't exist? It's a false flag, maybe.
Schrodinger's Gator. I guess you can sell some t-shirts while you're doing it. It's a revenue source for the city
sell hilarious t-shirts. At one point, old John Flaherty, the sewer chief, went down in the sewers wearing an Izod shirt, and he said, "The only alligators down here are on my shirt." And everyone went, lol. But that doesn't account for the, like, 50 alligators I mentioned that were found down in the sewers after he was down there. One might think that by declaring February 9th the Alligators in the Sewers Day in New York, and there's public art, there are little alligators popping up out of sewer grates as a kind of, you know, way of New Yorkers tongue-in-cheeking. But
because New Yorkers are famously not impressed by anything. So it would be very on brand for them to be like, yeah, of course we got alligators. We got the best alligators.
Yeah, and that's the other thing about New Yorkers. Famously have a great sense of humor about themselves and their city and their sports teams. In February of this year, a 4-foot alligator was discovered in Prospect Park in Brooklyn.
Was it discovered on Alligator Awareness Day or whatever it's called?
Well, no, that would have been, you know, 2 weeks prior. There was alligators in the sewer day. And then 2 weeks later, a 4-foot gator in Prospect Park. Now, again, in modern times, I ask you, how does an alligator grow to be 4 feet long? That's 1.3 meters. That's as long. That's not quite as long as this this epic antique table that we record at. It's as tall as you. No, you're taller than 4.5 feet.
Yeah, a lot of people think I'm 4.5 feet tall. In fact, I'm 4.75 feet tall.
It's the size of a preteen. Mm-hmm. Let's say a preteen, right? An 11-year-old. I know exactly how long it takes to grow an 11-year-old. It takes 11 years.
You got to feed it a ton.
Now, maybe gators grow faster, but I don't think they grow that much faster, especially if you bought it in a fishbowl.
Let's game this out. They're not flushing it.
Nope.
But you could realize this is now getting ungainly.
Yeah.
You take it in whatever crate or thing you're keeping it in.
But if you live in an apartment, again, how big is ungainly?
I was in a college apartment where my crazy roommates, one of whom owned a cockatoo, decided that they wanted a big koi pond in the living room. And they bought kind of a little above ground pool, which was maybe not supposed to go in a living room.
Okay.
And hooked it up to a water recirculating waterfall thing.
Because mm-hmm, they were a nerd.
And we had, yes, and we had koi in the living room. Now I can imagine somebody in Prospect Park buying what should be an outdoor water feature, lugging it home, and having in their living room a fun alligator.
Except you'd have to put a lid on it because the alligator, yes, would out of it onto the couch at night while you were sleeping.
Are alligators tameable enough that you could have an alligator just sauntering around your apartment?
I'm going to say no.
You'd think no.
No. I mean, I follow an Instagram account where somebody has a dwarf puma living in their house and the puma seems nice, but I wouldn't put my head in its mouth. And I don't think an alligator seems nice at all.
Is this a cultural thing? Do I need to imagine a certain...
Somebody from the Dominican Republic is like, oh, yeah, we all have alligators.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
No, I don't think so.
I'm from Bangladesh. Of course we have an alligator.
I think no. And I think if you were in Bangladesh, you wouldn't have an alligator at all. It might be a crocodile.
Right. That's true. Maybe that's where the caiman came from. It came in through the bathroom window. There it is. And that concludes Alligators in the Sewers, entry 033.LV1142, certificate number 36161. In the omnibus. Now, futurelings, we live in a time of great urban alligator denial, but also social media, which you'd think would be the thing that would blow the lid off this whole alligator conspiracy, right?
I'm waiting for alligators in a sewer's Instagram account.
We've all got cameras at all times.
Why is there not?
I guess we're not down there.
Confirm or deny.
If they were on the subway platform, we would see video. But we know they're not on the subways.
Oh, I watched Pizza Rat over and over for weeks.
Where's Pizza Gator? Pizza Gator is someone who believes in Pizza Gate.
I'm going to do it again.
It's fun.
Bell is here for a reason.
It's fun to have that back, isn't it? On social media, we are at Omnibus Project. I'm at Ken Jennings. You've been hearing the bell ringing stylings of at John Roderick. We received email at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. Tell us your alligator stories. And snail mail, we called it, to P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. Some time ago, we received these square Amazon boxes, one to John Roderick and one to Kenneth Wayne Jennings III. That's very official.
That's great.
It's been notarized.
Let me see.
Do you think we got the same thing?
Well, I don't know. Let's find out. They are the size of a record album.
It's got to be vinyl.
This seems like a vinyl shipping container.
Also, I think we got these months ago, and then I left them here and forgot about them.
You left them here at this house?
Yes.
Wait a minute. But we just recently cleaned all the alligators out of this space. Where were they hiding?
Luckily, I got them out of here before the great cleaning.
Oh, my goodness. Look at this. Oh, this is really beautiful. Should we reveal at the same time? I got the three album, not quite a box set, but a three album set of Tom Petty's Wildflowers sessions. All of the
I see one remastered. One album is Wildflowers, and the other two are outtakes and so forth.
Presumably, there's unreleased tracks here. Let's see.
I have Hypnotic Eye, which may be his last record.
Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Now, here's my question. Have we ever talked about Tom Petty on the show?
I feel like I talk about Tom Petty enough that I may have brought him up, but I'm
we could talk like Tom Petty. We talked about Florida today.
Right.
We talked about gators escaping to the north. That's kind of what Tom Petty did.
I can tell a lot of great stories I've heard about Tom Petty over the years because I'm a Tom Petty fan.
Is he a nice guy?
Seems like, well, you know, Tom is
dead.
Well, he's dead. That'll give you a sign when we recorded this show. Tom was notoriously meticulous. He did not suffer fools. If you look at his career, he does what he's going to do, right? Tom Petty doesn't stand around waiting for somebody else to decide.
And if you're in the Heartbreakers, that might be kind of a bummer.
Yeah, sometimes
you're sitting at home for three years if you're not Venmont Tench waiting for him to get the band back together.
Yeah, you're like, what?
It's the E Street problem.
What do you mean, Tom Petty solo record? And, you know, there were members of the band that wouldn't play those songs, specifically the drummer, didn't want to play Full Moon Fever. But Tom, yeah, stickler. But look, I mean, I don't think you can find a better songwriter.
Good girl.
So why do we have these, loves I wonder?
Your mama. Does your note tell you who they're from?
Well,
do you have an Amazon receipt?
I do.
I don't even have that.
It goes to Kenneth Wayne Jennings III, and it says, thank you very much for your order.
There's not a gift receipt?
There is not. And there's no this. Oh, it does come from Import CDs.
It's a mystery.
It is a mystery.
If you're the cryptid, if you're the Fresno cryptid who is anonymously sending us Tom Petty, late period Tom Petty on vinyl, please tell us why. And also, can I have Southern accents?
I didn't realize that owning all of the Tom Petty vinyl was a thing that I wanted, but now I'm not sure. Well, there's other vinyl in this room.
What do you got here?
Mr. Rogers, Won't You Be My Neighbor? I think there's
people have sent us odd records.
Yeah, I've got Prison Cole and Ensign Cusel on vinyl. I've got what was that? There was some Vienna Boys Choir record in here too somewhere.
Mindy was at a local salvage yard the other day, and as I was telling you, and was transfixed by all the free vinyl she could get, and so she came home clutching a sheaf of Mary Poppins and Camelot soundtrack albums. Julie Andrews, I guess. She's only getting Julie Andrews. That's her that's her collectability thing. We do not own a record player, so I don't know what her plan is necessarily.
I have a couple of record players. Maybe I'll gift you one.
Ooh.
But you're also going to need a receiver and speakers and all that. And I don't know if I can set you up with a whole system.
And I'm going to need the patience to listen to a bunch of Julie Andrews recordings from the early 60s.
Also, you guys are fancy, so you're going to want a higher quality. You know, this can be a little fetish item for you, like, oh, like bought a Macintosh amplifier. It only costs $15,000, but look, the tubes glow.
I've got 10 years worth of phonograph needles in my little kit here that I bought from a guy in Williamsburg.
Three Julie Andrews records. I love that that this is one of your first encounters with junkyards in rural places where they're half junkyard, half swap meet.
Mindy literally asked, how much does this cost? And the old lady's like, hun, it's called take it or leave it. Take it or leave it.
Every junkyard used to be like that. That's where I got all my pots and pans when I was in college.
That's where kids learned to lasso. Mm-hmm. They were lassoing rats and possibly voles. Here's some other mail. A postcard from Karen in North Dakota. Wait, didn't we already get one of these? Did I read this recommending we go to the International? Oh, we got a postcard about the International Peace Garden, but now it's a recommendation to go to the International Music Camp at the Peace Garden.
Huh.
And maybe then drive 40 miles south to get to the geographical center of North America.
Have you ever been there? That seems like a thing. Except you're not a road tripper.
I've seen pictures of it, but North Dakota is one of the states I'm missing.
Yeah.
One of the now 9 states.
That's one of those things where they say International Peace Garden, but it's really just Winnipeg is like the international component. Although Winnipeg, great music city.
Also, isn't the geographic center moving if ice melts? I mean...
Oh, the geographic center. Right, the population center. I mean, the population center
obviously creeps. But I'm just saying, like, a lot of that math must include perma ice places at Greenland and Canadian islands.
Well, as more of the Mississippi Delta sinks, that's also going to change the equation, right? Although you could probably walk 3 feet and...
I guess if you're losing what was counted as dry land up north, the center is going to move south.
But if you're
North Dakota may soon lose its geographic center to their hated enemies.
If you're also losing land to the Florida and New Orleans,
not at the same rate. Not at the same rate, Shirley.
Stop calling me Shirley.
You don't know about subsidence, and don't call me Shirley. We also have a new copy of Lay of the Land magazine. Let's see what the Center for Land Use Interpretation is talking about now.
I thought you were going to say, let's see the centerfold at this.
Yeah, here we go. Oh, it's a sexy reservoir. No, it's a map of major pumped storage sites in the USA.
Storage.
Our closest one, John Keys in Eastern Washington.
What is pumped there?
I'm going to assume it's water. I'm going to assume it's one of those hydroelectric
reservoirs. We're trying to capture all the snow melt from the 35 feet of snow at Lake Tahoe this year. So that in the summer,
they're currently digging a second Lake Tahoe identical to the first one and right next to it, but without Freddo.
Yeah. So people in the Central Valley can take baths in August.
We got invited to the Polson Bogenschutz wedding in Fishers, Indiana on the 20th of May.
The Polson Bogenschutz wedding.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I said.
Huh?
We could even RSVP or steal their stamp. Let's regretfully decline and send our good wishes. Are people doing this thinking we're going to send a blender?
Oh, that's a good question.
We're not going to send a blender, right? I mean, we're just going to forget.
There's a terrible thing. Somebody asked me to send, to do the simplest of all asks, which is, will you send something to my boyfriend who loves your show?
As long as it's not a video, I will always do it.
And I was like, oh, yeah, I should do that. And I had the return envelope, and I was like, I would walk past it and go like, oh, right, I'm going to send that guy a thing. And then I'm sure he grew old and died.
Does he listen to Omnibus? This could constitute his greeting.
Hello.
Whatever your name was.
Happy birthday, and congratulations on your anniversary, and I'll send you that thing as soon as I find the envelope that your beloved wife, fiance, girlfriend, sister sent me months ago.
If that answers your description, you might have gotten rid of 100 requests right there.
You know, I'm going
to be vague enough.
I'm going to be in Israel in the first half of May, so I would not be able to go to the Schultz Bergenheim wedding.
You have an alibi.
Yeah.
You're finally making that ancestral trip.
There it is.
It's all been paid for by the Israeli government.
I'm going to go work on a kibbutz.
The other thing, I don't know if I have an alibi on May 20th, but I'm still going to regretfully decline.
24th, but yes.
I don't know where Fisher's at. What?
You'll be somewhere. I thought it was on the 24th.
I think it said the 20th, but I don't know. Oh. Did I read it wrong?
Even more in.
You'll be in even
and I should
deeper.
Have said Israel, Palestine, Beirut, Jordan.
No, I can't find the date.
Lebanon.
Oh, we were supposed to RSVP last week.
Oops.
Yeesh.
And this episode doesn't come out until after their wedding, right?
No.
We're cut.
This will come out 2 weeks in advance. Please, if you're appalled that we're not sending a gift to the Polson Bogenschutzes, why don't you look them up online and find out where they're registered? Oh, here, I'll tell you.
Don't crash their wedding, but
go to Target, Williams-Sonoma, Crate and Barrel, Amazon, or The Knot. You just have to figure out how to spell Polson and or Bogenschutz.
And you can send them a gift and include us on the thank
you
card.
Say it from us. Say it's from us. I also got my 2023 membership card in the Kentucky Colonels.
Oh, where's mine?
I don't know. I re-upped my donation. Did you?
Oh, yeah.
I did not do it in your name.
I meant to do that. That envelope's on my...
You are no longer a Kentucky Colonel?
It's a lifetime appointment.
You've been busted down to Kentucky Major.
No.
They've taken your stripes.
It's for your life. I have a pile of envelopes of things I've been meaning to deal with. I always vote on time, and I try to pay my bills on time. But all the stuff like send me a pair of socks, re-up with the Colonels, I put that off.
This is signed by a commanding general of the Kentucky Colonels.
I didn't know that was
possible. They have a general, and his name is Gary.
General Gary.
That's his first name. I don't want to dox him. Also, I can't read his signature. Is it doxing if I reveal my Kentucky Colonel registration number?
No, I don't think so.
I'm 497218.
Hmm.
Do you think that means there are 497,217 other
Probably not living. I bet the first Kentucky Colonel is long past.
Probably so.
000001.
Do you think there was a 601? Probably yes, but it's Nathan Bedford Forrest or something, yeah, exactly. and we don't talk about it.
Exactly.
Please send us all that detritus to the aforementioned address. Find fellow futurelings online and argue with them about stuff. If you ever have the urge to support, to argue with us here at the Omnibus, you can do so,
mm-hmm.
But please show some etiquette, pay for the privilege.
Yeah.
Support the show at patreon.com/omnibusproject and then send us hate mail.
Or love mail.
Yeah. Or both. Love mail.
Yeah. Love mail. You only send me...
That's my favorite MTV show of the 90s.
You only send me love mail now. Do I get hate mail that you just don't send me?
Are
people like, John is such a jerk off.
We got joint hate mail, but maybe I'll save it for the, well, you've already heard it. I have saved it for the previous Addenda show.
Oh, yeah. The Addenda show that you've already heard.
If you're a Patreon subscriber.
That is Patreon-based hate mail.
It does have some hate mail. Not typically.
Not super hate.
No. But this one was very angry. There was a swear in it.
What's wonderful about subscribing to the Patreon is you get to listen to our Addenda episodes.
Of which there are now a backlog of 40?
40 Addenda episodes where we
30?
Where we get mail from our listeners, some of whom are real experts on the topics, some of whom are just cranky cranks, and some of them are like stoned hippie love children.
And we can't always tell which is which.
Yeah.
You should have to tell us at the start of the email, hey, I don't know anything about this. I'm a huge crackpot. And then proceed.
As Ken told me earlier today, he runs the show and I just get to sit here lolling back in my mid-century easy chair and adding color while Ken reads the letters.
We should alternate months. You should have to run the mail in February, April,
yeah,
June, August, October, and December.
You know what that would produce. I'd be like, oh, it's around here somewhere. You'd be clenching your fists. Grr!
This is why the Poulsen Bogenschutzes are never going to get a gift.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. But if the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if Providence allows, we wish you many goods and cheese and hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Almanac.